I suck at jujitsu. How do I suck less?
I guess
you
suck less.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the high-level leader of the
Hey everybody, this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So today is going to be a fun episode. I have told you guys over the last few months that I really wanted to kind of focus on the student and coach relationship by kind of having some different three-person podcasts where I have some different coaches and different students kind of together. And I thought that this one could be really unique because, the coach and student are Kyle and my dad. So it's my coach and my dad. And so kind of with this, how this whole episode kind of plays out, I think one, you get to see the fun relationship that we still have with our original coach, Kyle Watson, and you get to kind of see that dynamic a little bit. But two, we actually focus on that relationship and that kind of things that coaches deal with, things that students deal with. And we just kind of talk through our journey as, I guess, a team. And so I think this is a unique episode of the show, but it also kind of kicks off something I didn't intend to happen. We kind of have a tag team takeover for the next few weeks. I have a really good episode next week coming out with my friends Junior Silva and Nick Sanders. And then the week after, we just got done recording with Devin Parada. He was in at my gym, taught a seminar. It was really, really good. But I'll have him on the podcast the week after. So a lot of good tag team takeovers. Maybe we can jump in, get one more interview somehow, and really complete the go with four groups. That would be a really good set. Regardless, we're just gonna dig into today's episode. I think you guys are really gonna enjoy it. As usual, when you have Kyle Watson on the show, there have to be pee breaks in the episode, so we'll make sure to just carefully slide the commercials in there. But besides that, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And if you have any questions, as always, you can ask them in the link below, simplifyingjujitsu.com/ask, and we will answer those on our Q&A episodes. Besides that, let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right. Kyle, Steve, Dad, as some people call you. How are you guys
Hopefully
doing?
Only you.
Oh, okay. How are you guys doing today?
We're shaking.
Yeah. So I was excited to do this one. We kind of talked a little bit already about what we're going to aim for. I have talked on the podcast about how I wanted to do some episodes kind of focused on the coach and student relationship and how it evolves, because for almost everybody that I see, it doesn't evolve. It gets to this point where a lot of times it just gets disrupted, it gets rough, and there's like some type of split. And for us, I thought this would be a perfect segue to tell Kyle we're leaving.
I thought you were going to tell me you were leaving.
I just thought that, you know, for us, we have, both my dad and I have trained under you for over 15 years now. And it has, you know, like, we have built our own team in that time and still stayed under you and kind of built together a lot and just actually gotten to evolve with our relationship. And so I just thought we could maybe try to deconstruct some of the things that allowed that, kind of go through some of the stories and kind of all that. But I thought a good place to start would be specifically for you, Dad. What... if you remember, do you remember your first experience with training under Kyle? First experience doing a class
or meeting
him? The
first thing that comes to my mind is you were in class and I was just watching from the side and I was just having a conversation with Watson about training. And I'm like, hey, you know, with the typical, am I too old to do this thing? And so Watson's like, no, man, you should, you know, you should come in. Then the second experience was Bobby Brown. You and Bobby mm-hmm. Brown were coaching. And I was just shocked at how nice of guys they both were.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just come from that background to where not everybody's nice people. And these guys were just really good people. So those were the two, you know, experiences. And the third one is when Bobby Brown and I cleaned the mats, but we forgot to dilute the concentration.
Just clean the mats with pure concentrate.
And people's skin was boiling.
Yeah.
Everybody, so those were my initial three thoughts.
Everybody looked like white Michael Jackson after we trained on those mats.
But also the way that, you know, Kyle treated you was, you know, you just know that, you know, early on. Yeah, he's a good dude right here. So, yeah, it was just a perfect fit in my opinion. That was just kind of my first few thoughts of, you know, my first few experiences with that. It didn't answer directly your question because you asked about training. I don't really remember my first training experience there, but, you know, those were my first thoughts on it.
What about you, Kyle? Just any thoughts, any things that you remember when you were like, you know, I'm sure when you were dealing with Chubby Josh at 14 and Old Man Steve, you were like, I've got the duo here. You know, this is the duo. These will be my first black belts, you know. Anything you remember?
I mean, not specifically. I just remember, like, this kind of, like, constant, like, low level. Like, it wasn't anxiety of, like, worry. It was, like, this just excitement, anticipation of, like, wow, I get this opportunity to come down here and, like, start kind of my own program. And, like, I have full control. I mean, I definitely was nervous, you know, being in charge of a program as a purple belt and being like, you know, just kind of like wondering, you know, do I have all the answers? Do I have the right answers? You know what I mean? So there's that. There's also the excitement of just having, man, I have full control over whether this could be successful or a failure. And I was just like super, super motivated. And I just remember like you guys and Michael Allen and just like the, you know, just the first members. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. You know, just thinking like these will be my first members, but not having any clue, like, you know, at that point, like, cause you know, at that point I'd already trained long enough to see a lot of people come and go at my old academy. And you just don't know who's going to have the staying power and what's going to like make them like turn them off and be like, oh, this isn't for me versus like what's going to make this like really see it's a lifelong endeavor. So at that point it was just kind of like, well, how can I make this enjoyable? And just wanted to just have that thought of like, I want to cast a wide net, but I was lucky because as you guys know, running your own school, it's like once you have like a small solid crew, you just get a ripple effect because you get some good people and they just draw good people. And it just has an affinity for more people that have some of the same values and characteristics. So I was really, really lucky to have guys like you and Michael Allen and a handful of other people because then that ripple effect was created then. And I would have had no idea that you guys were going to be my first black belts, but obviously very blessed to have it be that way.
It's really cool. We're still looking for a good ripple effect with good people. We haven't got there yet in GC, baby.
We're struggling with it. Our best, you know, when your best guy is Bryce, you know, when like your most moral guy, your best person is freaking Bryce over there. You know, that's a rough place to be at. So do you guys remember, this is always, when I think about early training days, this is always where my mind goes. Do you remember the first tournament as a team that we went to?
I do.
Do you remember that,
Kyle? Was that the Ohio?
It was Ohio Grappling Challenge. Yeah. We went, you were on, maybe it was like an invite division. I don't remember. Do you remember who you grappled in that division at all? I don't remember that at all either.
I don't remember that at all. I always remember the picture because I was thinking like the picture of all of us and me and Derek and Mike Allen and stuff. I always remember how like contrasting because that's like one of the only pictures I have of you like being that small.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I remember that, but I know I don't remember who I competed against at all.
Yeah, I remember that was, I think, what, maybe we've been training for 3 or 4 months, and we went with probably a group of, you didn't compete at that one, right? Mm-hmm. There was probably a group of four of us that competed. Is that right? I know Derek McGuire competed, who's been on the podcast. Mike Allen, who avoids me every time I ask him to be on the podcast, leaves me on red anytime I message him about it. And then did anyone else compete with us, or was it Was it us four all doing that tournament?
Here's what I remember. I'm coaching someone. Maybe I don't remember who I was coaching, but I was waiting to coach you. And
it was when Kyle was competing.
You were going at the same time? Mm-hmm. Okay, because I looked over and they said, hey, Josh is competing. And I looked over and you were standing up in a fully locked arm bar. Not kidding. That's my, I still have that picture, but I'm like, oh, that doesn't look good right there.
I weighed in at 129 pounds for that division. That was my...
Man, at five, you were a big boy.
And that was like, you know, that was like the first time my mom made me start jiu-jitsu to lose weight. And that was like the first time I ever really had any motivation to diet because...
Yeah, I don't remember you being like pudgy though.
I think I was starting to grow up, and then I think you've been hitting the head a lot.
Oh, that's true.
You know?
I was going to reference that multiple times about when you're asking things that I don't remember.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, that was a physically demanding time for you.
Yeah, it was.
But I was 130, and they're like, yeah, we're going to start the invite-only division first. So everyone's competing. You know, Kyle's competing. We're all watching, and I hear somebody yell, Josh McKinney. And I'm like, well, that's weird. Why would somebody be yelling my name? And I walk over, and they're like, hey, you're going
but
right
you
now.
But you fought a big guy.
I fight a guy, so this is back when this is how the teen division worked. I'm 14, and the division's supposed to be 14 and under, and then 130 pounds and under. So I'm going to be the king of this division. I'm going to be at the top. My first match is with a kid who's 17 and 170 pounds and looking back, had like seven amateur MMA fights at the time. And so I get slapped on a few arm bars, and I want to say the ref was John Stutzman.
Yeah,
and he actually stopped the match in one of the arm bars and was just like, hey, dude, you should have tapped to that. I forgot. It was stressful. But I remember that is like, that's always my go-to of kind of what got the ball rolling. That group competed a bunch and, you know, really got to have fun doing jiu-jitsu with the Hit Squad then.
So what you're saying, though, is I neglected to teach you how to tap.
You know what? I think it was like a game plan for you. It was like, well, if he doesn't tap, you can't lose. You know, like you can. And so, I think that the nerves.
Did Pat go with us that time?
He might have. I know he went with us to a bunch of different tournaments, but I just can't remember specifically. It's crazy how long ago and how many different people. You go through, you know, when you think back to the original crew, do you have people that you think of like, oh, this guy's still training, even if it's not under you? Like, for instance, I was just interviewing Mark Rosencutter, who trained at the Hit Squad. Yeah. He was talking about Cody Dolly. You know, Cody Dolly's a black belt, you know, and so there's a lot of guys. Do you have anybody that you think of, you know, in that?
You know, not specifically that off the top of my head, but I do sometimes come across like old pictures from like not only Hit Squad, but like, you know, Watson 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see a picture. I'm like, oh, I forgot about that guy. And I'll be like nostalgic, but I'm like, wonder whatever happened to them. And just like kind of wish, you know, some of the people, you know, fell off and you just wish that, you know, they were still black belts today. But then seeing, you know, other people that maybe took a break but came back, like Tim Nolan and, you know, people like that, it's cool to see. Oh, man. And I've had people say, you know, it's like I remember I got a student, Robbie Garrison, who trained back at 1.0, and I remember him commenting, he's like, oh, man, he's like, what belt would I be if I would have just kept with it, you know what I mean?
Because
he'd
still be a white belt.
Well, he is a white belt now, and he took a long, long lapse, and but it's just one of those things. But, it's, you know, you can. That's the cool thing about it. I tell people all the time, jiu-jitsu's not going anywhere, you know what I mean? It's like you can always come back to it. Obviously, your body handles it different at different stages of life, but it is cool to see people come back and be like, oh, man, I wish I would have kept going, but at least you're here now, you know, so.
But secretly, we do hate those people as coaches, you know, even when they come back.
Quitter.
Yeah, you'll never be like the guy who stayed here the whole time, you know?
Sure.
So just on that note, as we kind of progressed, for some odd reason, my dad was always like, half a belt ahead of me. I don't know what that was about. But as we kind
respect
of...
Respect your elders.
As we kind of... progressed through the belts, there was this point where it was time for there was new management at the Hit Squad, and it was time to time to go off on your own. Do you remember kind of that thought process?
Yeah, it was very intimidating because it was just like, you know, my wife and I were living in the fighter dorms. It wasn't my wife at the time, but you know, we were going in that direction, and it was just like nerve wracking to be like, okay, I have this like kind of safety thing here, you know, but I was just very in the back of my head. I'm like, no matter what it is, like I'll make it work. I'll make whatever, you know, work. But you know, I should have had a backup plan along, because I saw writing on the wall, you know, the way the gym was run, you know, all great people, but just, you know, they weren't running it like a business, they run it like a fighter gym. Mm-hmm. And, I just remember thinking, man, but I had in my head that like, okay, together we created a pretty solid group. And I know if I had to, worst case scenario, I could do this again. Mm-hmm. But I also knew there was a lot of loyalty within the class, and I figured a lot of people would come with me, and they did. But I just felt like even if people didn't come with me, I could do it again if I had to. But it's just a nerve-wracking time, I guess, is kind of what I'm getting at, is just because it's just like the fear of the unknown, running your own business, having to be responsible. Because when I was there, I only had to train and I only had to teach. I didn't have to market. I didn't have to, you know, advertise. I didn't have to, you know, pay a mortgage. You know, it's like, you know, and then I was like, okay, now – to do all these things, think about all these things. So it's very nerve-wracking. So, but it was great in the sense that, you know, having built such a solid group of guys and people I could trust and lean on and stuff, and when everybody followed me over, it just made it a lot easier and take the stress away a little bit, having a group that I was like, okay, I can have that ripple effect again, you know.
And then you and I took a trip to Washington.
It's funny because I started to catch you on. I was just saying, I don't remember. It's one of those things I don't remember a lot about some of our trips, but there's always like one thing that sticks out.
And when we got lost. Yes, yeah. Yes. We got lost and we just kept driving around Washington going, look,
we saw that again.
That was the Pentagon or something. Like, this is a significant landmark that we just keep seeing.
We saw like five or six times.
Because we didn't know how to get out of Washington.
Yeah. So. And you're on a government watch list because you keep circling the Pentagon.
And we were
Why are these guys in hoodies?
Yeah.
Like circling around.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a fun trip.
When you look at that, you know, obviously that trip that you guys went on was to learn marketing, right?
Yep.
Yes.
And kind of like just to bring back to what you just said, there's definitely this disconnect when people want to start a jiu-jitsu school or want to start an MMA school or whatever, where they're like, okay, well, I can teach, right? Yeah. And like so much of it is like very, very little of it is actually teaching. You know, and so for you, how was that learning curve to, you know, to go from? And obviously you were helping sign up people. You did have a lot more than a lot of people do before they go off. But how was that learning curve for you?
You know, I think I lucked out, and I've referenced this before other times, you know, this has come up, but just fortunately I had been able to be a manager at other jobs before. You know, and one of them specifically, when I worked for Kaplan, they basically sell test preparation classes. So they sell educational classes to do better on tests. So that job had so many parallels because I was like selling educational programs and then I was managing teachers. So there was just so much that was similar. So honestly, I took a lot of the systems that I already had in place when I worked for Kaplan. I was my technical title was operations manager. And I felt like, oh man, this fits. And so I was able to take a lot of that. And I feel, you know, I was lucky because, like you just said, a lot of people think, okay, that's all I need. I just need to be good at jiu-jitsu and I can open up a school. But like, if you don't have any business acumen or sense about like running like the books and keeping ledgers and tracking things and understanding marketing at all and sales and how, you know, just, there's just so much that you wouldn't know that would be really hard to tackle while you're trying to pay the rent and try to run classes and what have you. So I was lucky in that sense. And then, like I said, just lucky. There's just people cross your path at the right time. Things are meant to be. And like I said, if you get the right people that can help you in the beginning stages, I think that goes a long way. So I think the combination of just already having a handful of like great people that were already kind of leaders in the gym and, you know, Matt Rats and then the ability behind the scenes stuff that, that kind of came together.
Yeah, and you are very administrative. You have that administrative gift. Josh and I do not have that. And so you're very organized. And so I think that makes a big difference. And so for us, we're, you know, always trying to find that person that can help us. And obviously Emily's helped us a lot in that. But I noticed that early on. You're just very good with structure. And that's just not been my strength over the years. But I always surround myself with people who are good at that.
Yeah.
You had that gift early. And so I'm like, oh, that really does make sense in the middle of that.
Well, I think that's something, too, that, you know, for people, like, going out on their own, if they know that ahead of time, I think that's why sometimes, like, podcasts like this would be helpful to just kind of tell people, hey, if you're thinking about doing it, you're thinking about starting your own thing, like, there's other stuff you need. Like, don't just say, like, I'm just going to, oh, I found a cheap place and I have some mats. Let's just go do this. Like, you know, even if you don't have the knowledge on some of the stuff that we're talking about, if you can find somebody that you know, likes jiu-jitsu, but they're maybe good at your weak areas, you know, you can always make it like a symbiotic relationship kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like starting a business. I always thought back on this. You would see the guy at the bar who loved to drink, and he's like, oh, start me a bar. yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And then you're like going, oh, yeah, that didn't work very well.
Yeah.
But you're drunk.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
So
true.
That's kind of the, you know, that's this tough thing with people with jiu-jitsu. But then it's also the other side of the coin is you have people that, you know, whether it was their intention initially or not, that like dedicate their whole life to jiu-jitsu. You know, and learning jiu-jitsu and mastering it. And then there comes this point where it's like, okay, well, what am I going to do with this skill? You know? And so, I always just kind of, I see that. And, you know, just as you have more guys that have been around for a long time for our gym, and it's just like, man, I don't know. You know, because you know you guys are drunk all the time. You know,
yeah, I was talking to Robert the other day, and he was in the gym. I could tell he was stressed, and I said, "Hey, man, what's going on?" Because they started their business, and he's like, "Man, really having trouble with this kick side thing." And I said, "Robert, listen, if kick side is your only problem, you're doing fine."
Yeah,
you know, I go, just hang with it; you'll learn it. You know,
yeah.
So, but yeah, it's struggles. You know, it's a lot of struggle for people, and not having that clear direction on what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, I was just say, like, I honestly, back when I was living in Champaign before I moved down here, I just always kind of thought in my head that I did want to teach and I did want to run a school, but I never had that idea that that could be my full-time job. I always thought, like, hey, man, I'm going to be doing something by day and I'll probably teach a couple nights in the week because I love jiu-jitsu and I'm really passionate about it. And I always thought, you know, I'll be a school teacher or whatever I was going to be doing during the day and then teach at night. And then once, you know, just kind of, you know, things worked out the way they did, I'm like, oh, wow, you really can do this.
But there's nothing wrong with that double combination.
No,
I think it's a good idea for some people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And I think also, too, I don't think that, you know, everyone can do that, like, large scale school. You know, that's not meant for everyone.
Correct.
And there's some people that, like, due to like family obligations, it makes more sense to just do it kind of part time, you know?
So. Yeah.
Any, and this could be for either of you guys, but just in running the jiu-jitsu school, are there any aha moments that you, just because we are talking about just the business side of things, specifically for the business side, as you guys came up, any moments that you can think back to that you go, oh my gosh, I wish I would have known that, or I wish I would have been better at that.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been about February 15th of 2020.
Yeah,
We bought a building in March 2020.
Yeah.
The world shut down. Mm-hmm. Could have waited till April to buy that.
I don't know. It would have been worth twice as much in April.
Oh, my gosh,
the price would have went up.
Well, that was pretty stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never had, really owned a building at that point. And so that was... You know, but I do look back on every business venture for me. And once again, I was, this was before the internet, when I'm running a business. Remember my first experience at being a personal trainer was, I was looking in the back of a Muscle and Fitness magazine, and for $5, you could send off a $5 bill to California, and they will give you a book on how to be a personal trainer.
All right.
And I studied that $5 book to death.
Wow.
And so that's where I started my
worth every penny.
It definitely has turned out to be okay.
Uh-huh.
So, but what I did in my business journey was I would work the part-time job, and then I had my personal training business. Then as my personal training business grew, I got to the point where I'm like, okay, I can't do the part-time job anymore. Mm-hmm. So I have to take this step of faith to move into the personal training business. And it's kind of been that way for us in running every one of the, you know, even adding the jiu-jitsu school. We grew out of this, we grew out of that. But we always went into the next business, and we always made a profit right from the get-go mm-hmm. because we had that set up. So sure. That was you know, that was kind of those aha moments for me looking back on those things. So
anything for you that you think back to?
Before my aha moment.
Oh my God, we're 5 minutes into the podcast, Kyle.
I know.
Hey guys, Josh McKinney. Just wanted to jump in and tell you guys about something really fun that we've been doing that I think a lot of listeners of the Isaac Jiu-Jitsu Show will enjoy. So we have been putting a lot of focus into the Josh McKinney BJJ YouTube channel. And the fun thing about that is we've been trying to teach Jiu-Jitsu in creative ways and just kind of give my personal kind of view on jiu-jitsu. And while we've been doing this and trying to figure that out, we've just been putting out so much free content on YouTube. I know people really like the podcast because how we have focused on simplifying jiu-jitsu training method and just how to go throughout your week, your month, your year as a practitioner. But what's really nice about these YouTube videos is they will show you how to go from move to move and position to position and really just break down the fun part of jiu-jitsu. And so love if you guys would check it out. I hope you guys like the way that I share jiu-jitsu. But besides that, let's get done with this bathroom break and let's get back to the episode.
Talking the mic.
Oh yeah, shut up.
Shut up, Bryce.
I feel like I should have brought you like a Christmas present because I feel like you take so much abuse.
It's good for him, man.
Bryce is just a good dude, man.
He is.
I always tell Josh, don't talk to Bryce like that. And he says, shut up.
Yeah, shut up.
And you shut up too, Bryce. So I think there's aha moments, you know, for both like just like running the business and just like, you know, kind of dealing with like people, and then of course like the jiu-jitsu itself, like learning jiu-jitsu yourself and teaching jiu-jitsu. I'm trying to think though specifically business-wise. But
let me throw a thought out your way. This is something that just came to my mind. I think one of the hardest things in running a business is the conflict resolution aspect of running a business. Mm-hmm. Because you find that, at least this is kind of you know, been my experience, just having boundaries in your business mm-hmm. is important. And some people will come in without any idea of what a boundary is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for
sure. And so, and it's really, that's always a challenge because you have to have, you know, difficult conversations mm-hmm. with people and say, hey, listen, you know, this is my business. And so I don't know, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, no, I mean, honestly, the conversations I've had with you, that's come up and I couldn't put a finger on it, but when you brought that up, it's like, oh yeah, that is what I'm dealing with a lot. You know what I mean?
There's boundaries, right?
Yeah. It's just like knowing when to say no or put your foot down. It's like, cause people will push you as soon as they get a little like an inch and I'm pretty passive as far as just being laid back. I like to just go with the flow. And I also like to appease everybody. I'm like one of those people, like, I like, you know, everybody
peace,
to, you know, yeah. Peace. And I just like everything to be laid back. And I think because of that, run it that way. I feel like my gym has been, you know, fairly drama free, but at the same time, when you're like that, people feel like they can take advantage.
They look
of
at that as weakness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always just think to myself, do not mistake my weakness or my kindness for weakness.
For sure.
Yeah. I was going to add to that, but I'll leave it at that.
Having a business where you can beat people up that you don't like is really nice, you know? Or, you know, you can have me beat people up, you know? That
you
was
gotta have those, yeah.
Yeah, that was really my
who
first.
Who was the first one? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Who was the first guy that did that in the gym?
What do you mean?
When we started.
like that needed beat up?
No, or who was the kind of
the regulator?
Who was the mat bully?
Oh, Derek McGuire, for sure.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
For sure. Before we talk about mat bullies, though, I do think I have a – this might have been something you wanted to get to later in the podcast. I don't know. But I think aha moment too, I think it kind of sums up what I was saying earlier, like in a lot of ways, is kind of realizing that like when you have your own gym and your own academy and your own curriculum and stuff like that, kind of just finally – realizing, and that's kind of what happened to me. It was a little over time and it was in like steps, but I remember some individual big moments where I'm like, wait, I don't have to follow all the dogmatic ways of like everything's run in the past. Like I can blaze my own path. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to figure that out. And even still to this day, there's a lot of things where I'm like, man, It's my place. I don't have to do it.
Who am I answering to?
Yeah, exactly. I know exactly. In the beginning, I was like, there's so many things, and that's why we all say, you know, we're standing on other people's shoulders, and now people are standing on our shoulders, kind of thing. Because I feel like now, just things are so much more flexible, and that like, there isn't all this like, I mean, there's still schools that have expectations and all these rules and boundaries, but I'm just saying that I feel like there's so many more places now that have gotten away from that. And I'm not even saying there's anything wrong with like traditions and like formal stuff. I'm just saying that there was like so long that I was thinking like, I have to do this just because like everybody before me did this. I feel like this is the right way. It took me a while. It took me honestly having a student like you, people who are like, you know, creative and more innovative and things like that. Not even just with jiu-jitsu, but just running the business in general. I'm kind of going circular here, but I'm just trying to say, like, I remember having a few aha moments where I was like, I don't have to do it that way. This is mine. I can do it any way I want. And I think that's, you know, some people can go too far that direction where they're like, you know, they can do stuff that's like, okay, that's, you're not going to cast a wide net because you're just getting a really, really small audience if you go too crazy that one direction. But I think just the freedom of kind of being like, oh, I can just put what's in the student's best interest in mind and really focus on like, okay, what am I teaching them? Am I teaching them valuable skills that will actually help them? Am I teaching them something that will improve their lives? Am I teaching them jiu-jitsu that's, you know, borne out in the data, like this works, this doesn't work, you know what I mean? Like having the freedom to do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Any specific example of one of those things that that wasn't as traditional that you said, oh well, I can do it this way? Just any thought that you have?
There's a lot of things. I can't necessarily pinpoint like just I guess one moment where I'm like, oh man, but I think just a lot of things like, you know, you don't have, and there's, again, I'm not dogging this about like, there's schools that do this. I think are great. No big deal. But like having to be like, you know, your gi, you have to wear all white gis. You have to have my patch on your back. You have to bow. You have to turn away when you tie your belt. You have to shrimp up and down the mats. You have to, run a class a certain way where it's like, you know, it follows this exact format. I have to cover, you've talked about this before, like armbar from closed guard that you don't really see very often. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to teach that just because I learned that. It's like, you know, how about an armbar from here that's way more high percentage? You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So that was a whole bunch of things. So, I mean, I think it administrative-wise, curriculum-wise, just culture wise, I think, just having the freedom to be like, man, I can do it the way I want and start to like, not do anything that would like degrade my integrity. I don't mean like, I just mean, you know, still follow things that are in line with my values and what have you, but also what I think jiu-jitsu could be, you know, and like how good can my students be? And then that'll take me down another pathway. I was just telling somebody else that the other day. I was like, I don't like – one thing I've been really happy about at Black Belt is I've been way more – I want to lead by example in the sense of that I was talking about that growth mindset, you know, and just thinking about like, okay, why are my students not good at something? Like, I can't blame them. I got to blame myself. It's like, why are they not good at something? Why are they not good at lasso guard? Oh, it's because I don't ever show it to them, mm-hmm. you know? But that's not a good enough excuse, because that's saying, like, I'm not showing it to them because I'm not competent at it. And then, so then they're not competent, and that's not fair to them. So I've been really on a mission to, like, anything I feel like is valuable and usable, I'm trying to learn it better myself, try it out, test it out, pressure test it, and then show it to them, because I don't think them not being good at it because I'm not good at it is a good enough excuse, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's like right now, just today I started a closed guard series. And I even said, I was like, hey, do you see closed guard a lot at the high levels? Not really as much. There's a few anomalies, like Michael Lear Jr., a few guys. But I was like, at white and blue belt, you see it a lot. Mm-hmm. You see it a lot at tournaments. So I was like, let's work on it. And I was like, I hadn't really shown like a lot of like the pinch headlock and shoulder crunch stuff. So I was like, you know, that's not something that's in my wheelhouse, but guess what? I want to be better at it. I want you guys to be better at it. So let's focus on something and get better at it together. That was a long-winded way to say, like, that was tying it back into what I was saying earlier. I have the freedom to do that. I don't have to be like, hey, my coach never showed me that. And that can be an easy excuse. You know what I mean? Just be like, my coach never showed me that, so I'm not going to show it. You know what I mean? That's, or that answer to the question when people say, hey, what would you do here? Just give me the answer. Oh, I don't play that. That's not a good answer.
Yeah.
To be like, no, this is what you could do. Anyway, that was a long-winded thing.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I do remember you teaching that, though, at the hit squad.
Yeah.
That pinch arm bar thing. Yeah. Serious. So.
Man, I look at that and, you know, I do see like so much of the evolution of jiu-jitsu, where jiu-jitsu is just taught so differently than it was even when we started learning from you. And so, and
there's so much out there too, right?
There's so much out there. And that's, I think, why, you know, you are then forced to teach differently, because, one, not only are there so many more techniques and ideas out there, but then you have to try to whittle those down to, well, we only have a small amount of
time.
That's
what I was going to ask. Do you find that, I guess for both you guys, do you find that how much is too much? I guess is.
So here is a topic that I have, and this is probably a terrible idea to try to guide us down. But I've had this thought that the current, and this is still how I teach jiu-jitsu classes too, but I just have this thought that maybe the current way of teaching a class, the current class structure, is not the best way. And that's not to say that I have an answer for what it actually is, but I just, when I see that, you know, okay, we're going to show these three moves, and really this is probably going to actually apply to 10 to 20% of the people in this room, but everybody is going to drill it. And then if you don't do that, though, there is no focus, and then generally, you know, people are just not able to, you're not good enough to know what you should be working. And so I just noticed this disconnect. I was actually talking to Sanders about this just a few days ago. Like, is there a better way? And this is, like I said, this is a very open-ended question. But do you guys notice that at all? That or do you guys like the...
Well, I think personally, I think that a wide variety of techniques has to be taught so that, you know, it's kind of like you have a suit the suit's on the rack. And then somebody goes and picks the suit up off the rack, but the suit has to be tailored for that particular person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think the wide variety of techniques is the same thing. Those techniques have to be tailored for that particular person. As a matter of fact, the last 2 weeks, I started adding just one takedown. We did it today. Just as a start. And I'm like, we need to touch on these a little more. But if I can use this as a so-called warm-up, it's going to still help people learn a takedown.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. I just look at that and say, okay, now let's get a very broad curriculum going. And then you are conceptual in your teaching. But I think that people still have to learn the technique that goes along with the concept behind it. And so... I don't even know if that answers your question, but that's just a thought that
I don't even know if I ask a real question.
I think I just
threw a statement out and said, hey, guys, do something with this.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I think that's what I think makes our gyms like successful too, is that we're willing to test things and be like, hey, maybe we don't have it exactly perfect. What can we make better? And we're all striving to make it better. And I've been thinking about that a ton lately too. And even today, like what I've been kind of experimenting with, and it seems like I like it. I don't do it all the time. I just kind of mix it based on kind of what we're doing. But I've been trying to do a lot more, not Q&A, but basically like where I'll pick a position and just kind of say, okay, here's both of your goals, top person, bottom person. Let them see what they do kind of organically, bring it back in, and then troubleshoot a little bit and then be like, okay, what did you guys – so today, here's an example. We started on a closed guard series today. And I'm working on this thing. I'm going to get off tangent, but I'm working on this thing because, you know, what I think is really frustrating for jiu-jitsu people in general, I always talk about the main things that are going to make people quit is injuries like plateaus and like a lack of a sense of guidance. Like they don't know what they should be doing. I see people get frustrated all the time. So I've been working on something in the background, kind of like partially for me in the sense of like a template for my curriculum. So it's easier to adjust as I go, but also something that will provide more guidance. Like what should I be doing? What should I know to be kind of the next level? Like what should I be know? So I'm trying to work on something like that. But I've been like saying like, okay, if we're in a particular position, take the individual techniques out of it and like, what should I be good at? So today I said, and you could probably add more, but you don't want to get so convoluted that you lose the new people. But I said, okay, well, this is, if I had to say, I want you to be good at a bottom position, what do I want you to be able to do from the bottom? Okay. And I asked, and people said almost all my options. I kind of had it as five. Somebody said maintenance, like guard retention, but I would overlap that amongst all, you know, guards. You need retention, right? So that was just kind of a broader topic. So I said, I would want you to be able to get up. If you're on bottom, I would want you to be able to sweep a person. Okay. I would want you to be able to do an upper body submission. I would want you to be able to do a lower body submission. And I would want you to be able to transition to another guard or a couple guards, like transition between guards. Okay. So then I said, okay, knowing that those are the five things I want for you in this position. Now we're going to work on a series and I'm going to give you a little bit of each of those, but you'll gravitate towards what you like. Okay. So with the pinch headlock, you know, I'm going to be able to show them, you know, I'll probably this series just kind of gonna keep it simple. I probably won't do any lower body attacks. Probably won't go underneath to get the legs, but we'll do upper body attacks. We'll transition to other guards like the dogfight. We will sweep, you know, so that way, and now to kind of tie back into the original question, it's just kind of I'm testing different formats to kind of see what works better. And that one I feel like has been going well. I tried it in the advanced class a bunch where it's like, it's not like I still show moves, but it's like, hey guys, this is your goal. This is your objective. Let me see what you would do or how would you achieve that objective? And I kind of look and see if there's any overarching like commonalities, like what's going wrong amongst most of them, what's going right. And then I ask them for feedback. What problems are you having? What was good? Whatever. And then I go, okay, well, here's some things you can, here's some tools. So like today when we were breaking posture, I said, okay, a lot of people were having trouble with certain grips. I was like, well, you do this, you do this, you do this. Here's some tools to help you. Now go try it again and then watch them and then keep adding. And then now, okay, now that you feel okay there, now let's actually add some techniques where I walk you through it and see if that helps even more. And that's been going pretty well. But I just think the fact that we're willing to say, this is working, like, people are getting better. If you show up, you're going to get better regardless, but can we do something that's going to make them better faster and then test it?
I think about that so much because I just, you know, so much when you really look at, you know, I don't know why lately just on the podcast, I've really been digging in on bashing, shrimping up and down the mats. but it's just I think it's a low hanging fruit thing of inefficiency. Right? It's like, well, if this really was an efficient thing to be doing with your time, then everybody that you train with would be unmountable and unside controllable because you guys spend 10 minutes on this every single class. Yeah. But your guys' side control escape is is not, you know, you're not just escaping every position. And so, you know, that's just where I look at, like, okay, that's something just by removing, you make your classes more efficient by teaching something in that time or doing something, drilling a move that is actually a move, you know, something that is actually using another person's body weight and using another person's frames and actually getting there. And so that's just kind of where I, you know, I notice that inefficiency, you know, even when I'm teaching a class and I'm like, I don't have a good way to solve this. You know?
Well, I think that goes back to where we're talking about it, and not that it's still forgivable, still unforgivable, shrimping up and down. No, just kidding. But that goes... That goes back to, like, a lot of people probably do that because they haven't broken away from that. Like, that's what I was taught. Mm-hmm. I had to think out how long I did that. Even at the Hit Squad, First Academy, probably, you know, like, we played elbow tag. We played, you know, some games. We still did, like, a bunch of warm-up stuff like that because I hadn't broken free yet. I was like, oh, this is what you do. This is how it was.
Man, class I forgot format. About elbow
yeah.
tag.
Yeah, it was elbow tag. Man. I thought about bringing it back just for fun, just to mess around.
I do.
You
I,
know what I'm going to talk.
Go ahead. You go for it.
You can tell it
so
better,
I can see in my, I'm assuming this is what you're talking about.
Yep.
See in my mind's eye, this guy, he is on his day one trial class at the Hit Squad.
His name
is Kenny, and we are getting ready
Rest
to.
Rest in peace, Kenny.
R.I.P. Kenny. This episode is dedicated to Kenny. So, spoiler alert, he is on day one trial class. And how elbow tag works for someone who doesn't know is it is just an excuse for grown men to play tag.
And there is no way
to win or lose this game. It's tag, you know? Yeah. And so, like, I guess the only way you lose is you're it when the timer ends. And Kenny is sprinting up and down the mat. No warm up because this is our warm up.
He shrimped
as fast as he could, and he goes for someone who is a little faster.
But he is
and
literally
he lays
flying.
Out.
Yeah, he is. I can still see him in my mind's eye.
Completely parallel to the mat, and then not only that is reaching right arm. Just that rib space is wide. Open. Oh. If Chris Paynes was there talking about protecting your armpit space, Kenny was not doing that. He was not protecting his elbow space, and he splattered on the mat, and he tore his hip flexor, and he never did jiu-jitsu again.
Man, I don't remember that.
Oh, I remember it well.
Was I there?
Yeah, you were there.
You
were the one who made us play elbow tag, man.
Sorry, Kenny.
You know, and you see that, and that's why they'll be playing games in the kids' class, and adults will be like, why don't we ever play any games?
Because
like,
we're not
you guys are too irresponsible. You guys will guaranteed injure each other.
Absolutely.
You injure each other with jiu-jitsu where we have the safety net of tapping. Like, you will break each other's bones, go through the window, you know, like.
And look at the kids' coach over there. Here's what he's doing. He wants this to be over, and he's filling time. That's all he's doing. And how do I know that? I coached kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And my thing with coaching kids was we had, like, some rough kids when we started off. Actually, you know how, like, you know, well, they were just bad kids. I don't even know how to even, you know, change that. But I was like, oh, my gosh, this is terrible, and they're disrespectful. And every time I leave class, I would just be mad at the kids. And so the game that I played was if the kids would smart off to me and I would respond and get mad, they win. And if I didn't, you know, I win. So that was the only game I could play before I had someone come in and Coach Logan take over the kids' class. Because it was hard. It was hard for me.
Did we – I don't want to get too far off that topic, but did we – I don't know if we've discussed it before. Did we talk – because I thought about, man, just sometime I ought to bring back just a couple of games – but the only reason why I haven't is just because I'm like always worried about people getting hurt.
Yep.
But I don't know if you remember or if we've ever talked about it on the podcast. Is like two games I vividly remember just for how brutal they were was we played that like it was like human like tug of war. And so they put a line and this was more the MMA guys. They put a line or like a rope or something and they divided us up into teams. And the whole goal is you won if you pulled everybody else on the other side across. But what was legal by Hughes's terms were that if somebody, you're on my team and someone pulls you across the line, but I still have any part of your body I'm hanging on the other side. You're not across. But while they're pulling you across, you're allowed to like jump on them and choke them and like arm lock them. So it was like you had to pull everyone across, but it was almost like you could fight while you're doing this, like your grapple. And so that was super brutal. And then the other one was where everybody, when it came on the mats, you everybody wore socks and there's two teams and like same thing. You could still submit each other, but the winning team was the only ones that had socks left on at the end of the match. You had to get everyone else's socks off like while fighting.
Seems a little sexual to me. Yeah,
I just remember their socks.
Yeah, are you sure you played that at jiu-jitsu?
I remembered the dodgeball was the most.
Yeah,
yeah, that was
when Robbie Lawler almost burned my lips off with a heater. I remember that so close. He hit me at point blank range. I turned right as he got the ball, and then I turned away, and the ball like went past, and it felt like the ball burned my lips off. It hurt so bad. He hit me from like 3 feet away, and Robbie's got an arm.
You know, the funniest thing about dodgeball is every dodgeball story, because I was talking to Todd about this, involves Robbie Lawler.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Do you remember when he got mad?
Oh, yeah. Not only was he incredibly competitive, he really was one of the most gifted athletes that I've ever seen in person.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, for sure. No question about that.
Yep. He could throw. I remember when he got mad, he threw a trash can, which was no big feat of strength, but then he grabbed a 30-pound weight and he threw it across the 20,000-foot facility. And it hit the chin-up bar literally 40 feet away. It was a world record.
Do you remember why he got mad?
He got a guy out, and the guy said he didn't get
the
out.
The guy's name was Josh.
Yeah,
I remember
Josh McKinney.
Yeah, no, that wasn't. Yeah. No, he remember the guy. I'd be dead. That guy's dead.
Yeah,
you know?
R.I.P.
R.I.P. This episode's dedicated to Josh.
But McKinney.
Yeah, I remember he was furious.
Yeah, I remember that as well.
And that was people were fearful for their lives,
you know what?
Luckily, nobody went to the gym, you know? Luckily, nobody actually worked out there, because that weight would have hit somebody, you know?
Yeah, those were interesting times.
But yeah, I thought about sometimes just bringing a couple games back and trying them, but then every time I'm like, no, someone's going to get hurt.
Yeah, ask Kenny how that feels.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That is, who of your guys would get hurt? We haven't attacked any Watson martial arts students yet.
Man,
who would
just
be the person?
I feel like there's those two types of people. There's some people that'll take the game way too serious and go way too hard. And there'll be people that like don't know exactly how the game is played, / are timid, and they'll get hurt by the first people. You know what I mean? So it's like
who would get hurt in our gym, Josh?
Everyone. Yeah. I'm sure though Nick Demetrius would be top of the list on injuries caused and then injuries received. I'm sure that he would be, you know, bringing the intensity.
Absolutely. So.
So on that note, any other, while we're bringing up crazy hit squad stories, any crazy hit squad stories that are coming to mind, they can do with games. I remember just going to the hit squad and the pro MMA class where you had guys that were fighting in the UFC, trying to get into the UFC, dedicated their whole lives to MMA. They would spend the entire 2 hours playing dodgeball for.
I said that all the time. I was like, I think our team is probably way better at dodgeball than fighting.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
But I know going to those classes Tuesday nights at 5, mm-hmm. Get in there early just to watch who would come through the door. You know, you would have all kinds of great guys coming into that gym and be able to watch that.
Man, that's why I feel like my body's so beat up. I tell people all the time, like I hate, like, you know, it's like you and I try to, you complain about being old and I try to use your example, but sometimes I just feel like complain. But I tell people like, oh, you're only this age. I'm like, yeah, but it's about the mileage. You don't have 30 pro fights, or you didn't do two a days for literally 4 years. It was like I had the expectation that I would be in every pro class and then teach a couple jiu-jitsu classes like almost every day. It just super, because I'm kind of paying for it now. I mean, I still.
But I watched those Monday classes. Man. You guys would start Monday after the Sunday off. You'd have that Monday morning class, and I went there one day and watched that. And you're jumping on boxes, followed by a 2 mile
timed run.
Man, there's so many crazy workouts that they devised that like literally did nothing but like just tear us up. Like I remember going, we go out to the golf course, and I mean, don't get me wrong, there's for sure some mental toughness, and there was definitely conditioning. We were in shape, but like we go out to the golf course, and there's a hill, and they make us do all these like different partner carries where we'd run up the hill with somebody on top of us in different formations, either holding them, whatever. Then we'd like, you know, then we go down and do like takedown drills, pummeling, and then we'd run back to the gym and we'd have to do that rope was like 24 feet. We'd have to go up and down like three times after just doing all the carries and stuff, but just insane stuff. And then in night practice, then it's like either 100% live sparring with headgear and shin pads, or it was grapple boxing with the small gloves and grappling. And you're going with all these guys that, you know, and some of those guys, you know, they would skip practice or something. They come in and it's like, you know, you did everything, like, you know,
and they're fresh.
Well, I mean, it isn't just that, but I'm just saying sometimes that happened. But also you don't know who you're going to get in what round. You might get Hughes one round. You might get Jake Heck one round. You might get Neil Magny one round. You might get Robbie one round. And it's like brutal.
It was hard on your body, man.
And the problem with like, cause that kind of training, it still exists for a lot of people of, you know, oh, well, we're training toughness. And you do, you know, you can be conditioned if you're young enough to stay healthy in that. But then it's like the problem is if you're not working skills, all it does is allow you to get beat up a little longer than anybody else. You know, your cardio like is more impressive as you're getting beat up. Like, man, this guy can really take a beating.
Well, I would notice that in fights too. Sometimes you go corner some of these amateur guys that would like be in the pro class. And it'd be like, yeah, you're in great shape, but when you didn't get out of that first round armbar, where did your conditioning help you? You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. Bottom out is not the best position to be in.
No, exactly.
But let me ask you guys this. I remember vividly the armbar defense being taught. It was Phil Baroni's armbar defense. Do you guys remember the best defense to an armbar?
Getting punched in the face.
A punch to the face. I remember that. Then I also think back to when Phil Baroni grappled AJ Agassi's arm and they went to EBI overtime and they said, do you want to start on the back or an arm bar? And he's like, an arm bar. And so then he didn't know how to do an arm bar. And they actually, the ref had to arm bar the other arm to show him where he should be at position. That is a beautiful.
Well, let's look at where Phil Baroni is
Mexican
now.
In jail. We want to talk about that. Right?
Yeah, that's what the moral of the story is. That's what happens when you don't know how to do a proper arm bar.
That
you end
is
up right. in a jail cell somewhere for killing your wife or girlfriend or whatever.
That's what happens. That's why you learn arm bars.
To those mental toughness things, and I know there's stuff to that, but I've always said, and I've watched over the years with trainers and different things like that, the least understood part of like MMA, jiu-jitsu, the whole nine yards, is recovery.
Mm-hmm.
That is the least understood thing. And it's like, you know, just taking some time, you know, taking some time off and not training, you know, hard as you can every single day, twice a day. It's just too hard on your body. You just don't last like that.
Yeah, I wish I would have known that. And I wish I would have, like, it's just kind of like that whole idea of like, you know, you only know what you know at the time. There's so much stuff has evolved and come out since then about how to train smarter.
Oh, my gosh,
you know,
yeah.
I wish I would have known that because I would have been way more proactive and be like, no, listen, I'm not going to come to this practice. And, you know, and just feeling like that expectation to be at every one. It's like, yeah, like my joints are definitely painful.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, for sure.
But
for me, I look at this year, I've competed better this year than probably ever before. And I really attribute a lot of it to I had a few injuries that didn't allow me to train. And I was, you know, competing 1 week and then doing a little bit of drilling for 2 weeks because I was injured and then competing 2 weeks later, and I would perform so well. And I'm like, that's weird. And it started to just realize, like, especially in jiu-jitsu, because it's so fun to train jiu-jitsu, it's unbelievable how habitually overtrained everybody is.
I know.
You know, and I think because the model of training is kind of based off of steroid use.
It really is, in the sense that you see these guys and you look at the top level guys and they're like, oh, we're training twice a day, and you know, we're doing this. And like for the average person, you train once a day, but you got to go home, try to get to sleep, and then get up to go back to work the next day. And it's, you know, yeah. you just don't have enough time to recover. And that is huge, you know. It's like, yeah, I've just, that's been one of my things over the years. It's like, man, just allow your body to recover. And you'll, I talk to people, there was someone that was in the gym. There, we have a new guy, and super nice guy, but he's runs every day and lifts weights 5 days a week. It's like, oh, I got some injuries. I go, look, dude, you just added something more to your game. I said, cut it down to 2 days a week. I'll get flabby. I'm like, trust me, you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, and you'll be able to train. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was Ross was saying, yeah, I followed that advice and I, you know, feel so much better. And he's very strong. You roll with Ross now. So, you know, so yeah, it does make a difference. The recovery is a factor.
I also gave him the advice to get on steroids, too. So that's, that, that could be part of it. Yeah. Hey, guys. Josh McKinney here. Just wanted to tell you about something really exciting that we have going on at SimplifyingJiu-Jitsu.com with the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show, with all of the content that we create. And it is our Ask Us Anything button. And this is available at SimplifyingJiu-Jitsu.com/ask. It is completely free. But if you ever have a question for any of our Q&A episodes or any suggestions of a guest or any suggestions of questions for a guest, you can always drop that at SimplifyingJiu-Jitsu.com/ask. We have a link in the description, and this is the easiest way to get your questions answered and just to give some good feedback for the show. Let's go ahead and get back into this episode. So just kind of, you know, at this point, the real, you know, or kind of back to the original focus of just that kind of coach-student relationship. We've really talked about how jiu-jitsu is evolving, but that is a relationship that is, it's really interesting because where it starts at, where it's like, hey, I am to you, I am all-knowing, and you know absolutely nothing. And that is the start. And then hopefully, eventually, you will start to know and you will start to understand. And so, you know, I just noticed, though, that this dynamic between coaches and students, especially in the transition period where they start to get a little better, and then just like with a child, they're like, oh, well, I get it now. I know everything now. And then we'll even start to go out other places to learn and go out to other instructors to learn. And that's when I noticed that a lot of times that the dynamic should probably shift some, but it doesn't. Is that something you guys notice in having students in, or even just when you look at other coaches and you hear about the problems that they may have with their students or just kind of things like that?
I'll answer first and then I'll let you jump in on this. But here's the thing with you know, with you and I personally very faithful person. That's just kind of, you know, just a loyal person. It's one of my traits. I'm just loyal sometimes to a fault, but I just remember thinking back in just some of the questions I would ask you. And I knew I started older and I thought to myself, this guy is a godsend for me. Because if I had the wrong coach, they would coach me into injury and he would always look out for me, you know, and even point out to me, hey, you need to calm down. Don't wrestle with this guy. And he always protected me. So for me, that just meant so much. And so so I, you know, yeah, ventured out a bit, but, you know, not much. Yeah. But I do notice, like, in our gym, one thing, and I get on people about this stuff, but I'll tell people when I'm coaching or teaching a move, and I look at them, they're doing another move, I'm like, hey, listen, don't come to class if you're going to do that. Because if I see you in a tournament and you are not getting the position that I'm just teaching you right now, I will kill you. And so, but I know, I just let them know. Or another thing is, if people want to come in a half hour late and then just roll rather than come to the technique. I'm like, dude, don't do that. That is, that's not only respectful to the gym as a whole. It's respectful to your teammates. You're here to help each other. There may be a nugget that you have, that, you know, you can share with someone in the middle of that. So I'm a little, you know, I just been a little more assertive in that area of just saying, you know, be on time and come in, and, you know, I'll, like Jerome comes in late, I always embarrass him with him. Like, bro, why are you coming in late?
And then call him out on the podcast.
Always, yep, always.
Junior made him do push-ups for being late to over Fives Open. Yeah, that was awesome.
I always point that out too. Like when people, try to make it known, but still jokingly about it. It's like
we call that passive aggressive. Yes.
I always like to hit him with the like, hey, you can show up late. You're allowed to suck. You know, you're allowed to suck. I don't care. It doesn't hurt my feelings. Everybody beat them down. You know,
you do that too. I know.
Yeah, I think that's like that's a personal trade-off. Like, oh, you want to be late? Be bad. I don't care. That's your responsibility.
Well, that's why one of the purple belts. Well, I won't name his name, but he came in like he's late a fair amount, and he came in like 10 minutes late and just in front of the whole class. I'm like, and that's why you'll never be a brown belt.
And that wasn't passive aggressive.
Yeah.
That was fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, to your,
that's brutal. That's worse than what I said,
That's good. I'm going to use that one.
What was the original question? I was going somewhere with it.
Why people don't get brown belts?
Yeah.
It was just on the evolution of coaching and just kind of.
Because our path has been like interesting and unique. I feel like it's kind of like, you know, I was with my old coach for a long time, so I understand the whole the long term relationships and what have you. And I think they're super, super important. But I don't think blind loyalty is also correct, not always, you know, the answer. And it got to a point, like I remember too, and we may or may not have talked about this before, but I mean, it just got to the point where I've said this many times before where, I mean, I had a hard time passing your guard like at high blue belt. Like, you know, I mean, I could. You know, and I just remember like times where I'm like, man, I was like almost being like bothered by the fact that I was like, man, I'm the coach. I got to be better. You know what I mean? But then that was another like one of those moments over time, that aha moment. They're like, no, you want your student to surpass you eventually. Not fast, because obviously you still want, you know, there's still some ego involved, but you need them to surpass you. And then it was just really cool when that was something I could let go of too, where I'm like, okay, well, Josh is now technically superior to me, and he definitely is better at jiu-jitsu than me, and letting go, and then just truly being happy about it. You know what I mean? It's like I was saying yesterday, like Trevor's one of my black belts, and he went white belt to black belt with me, and he knee barred me yesterday, and I literally, before I feel like I'd be like a little annoyed and then be happy. And then before that, it was just annoyed. It was like annoyed, then annoyed, and a little happy. But now it's just like, dude, that was awesome. Like, high five. Good job, man. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to try not to let that happen again. But the way you set that up was awesome. So I'm not saying it's always like that. You still don't want to, like, obviously lose and get your ass kicked the whole time. But I think that's one of those other things that's cool when you can let go of that and realize, okay, well, now what's just in their best interest? And it's like some coaches, I think, too, are like that. You know, it's like I came up in during the time period where, you know, it was kind of just frowned upon to like cross train, really. It is. Mm-hmm. I still get people, you know, I just had, I won't say that their name, but I just had a black belt call me just last week, ask me what I thought about one of his students, like not only cross training, but talking about cross training within his gym to other people. And they just asked me how I'd handle that. And my thing is like, you know, in the beginning, when you have like a small academy, you're worried. But then when you start to have more confidence in that, like, you know, I am delivering a great product, or I am delivering a great service. I do have something that's desirable. You know, let people choose their own path, and don't be so like, I got to hold on to them. And I think early on, though, I was okay with like, didn't think it was that big of a deal to cross train. But then it became like, not only am I okay with it? I'm like, encourage it. Now I'm like, man, you should cross train. It's like, you are not going to be the best version of yourself. You know, if you don't cross train, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? If I like continue to say, okay, Josh, you can only, just have whatever my knowledge is, whatever I pass down to you, and nothing else, then you would be way, like, not nearly the level you are. So I think it's just the fact that you can just train with who you want, be creative, experience what you want. I think that makes people more of a complete grappler and, like, be able to kind of fulfill their, you know, their destiny, yeah, so to speak. So, yeah. So anyway, I just think that was, that's an important thing.
When I think back to my growth in jiu-jitsu, and that was like, it was never discouraged for me to train with John Thomas. And it was never discouraged to train with this guy and that guy and learn from these other people. And a lot of times it was more encouraged than anything. And especially back then, that was very, very frowned upon most places. It's like, no, you only train with our guys. And I remember getting this leg up on people because I got so many more reps with so many new ideas, and I got so many new ideas. But then I also look at that with, like, with students kind of surpassing. Jiu-jitsu is weird in the sense that it's like, oh, the coach should always beat you. And you look at any other sport and it's not that the case, yeah, right? Yeah. You look, Pete Carroll is not out there playing defensive back and playing better than Richard Sherman. I know he doesn't play for the Seahawks anymore.
But we get the point.
Right? Yeah. And so you don't, like, you know, there is a coach is a role. It is not that doesn't, you know, in jiu-jitsu, the coach does beat you up for a long time. But kind of understanding that, like, not only is it okay, but, you know, ideally, your students should start to beat you, yeah, you know? I think that's a sign of a really good coach. Jeff placed second at Nogi Worlds, and he says, and he knew the answer to this before he asked, you know, he's a little jerk, and he's like, do you ever place at any Worlds, Josh? And I was like, or he goes, how many times did you place at Worlds, Josh? And I go, zero. And I go, Jeff, ask me, how many students I've had place at Worlds. And I go, I got three. How many do you have, Jeff? He's like, but I was one of them. I'm like, I know. It's like, I'm building off your accomplishments. Yeah, that's what a coach does, right?
Yeah, mission accomplished.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So do you guys see any things that, you know, we kind of talked about, you know, things that are respectful with you know, that was like, I felt like there was always a mutual respect between us and you, you know? And so it was never hard to be respectful of you, you know? I could always be respectful of the decisions you made. Do you guys see anything that maybe other coaches might do that maybe aren't as respectful to their students, you know, and don't produce that culture that we're kind of saying that you should have of evolution?
Yeah, I think, and this goes honestly with the last thing too, I was thinking that one of the reasons I think that made me earlier on be easier to understand kind of you needed to cross train and what have you, and you know, not to put any students in a box, is that I have like that hunger for knowledge. So like, I'm always like trying to like get better and learn. And I feel like when you have that as a coach, like you wouldn't not want that for your students. You know what I mean? Like if you're always like, I want to learn something new, how can I say, well, I don't want you to learn something new. You know what I mean? And so I think that also answers this question too, is I think there's a lot of coaches that aren't really hungry anymore to learn. They're kind of like, you know, I know what I know. I've already accomplished this. And it's easier to be like, just like, this is good enough versus like, you know, keep going. So I think, I guess maybe that didn't answer the question, since I don't know that that's intentionally disrespectful, but I think it's like, I definitely think that is like holding them back a little bit. If they're just kind of like, you know, I'm going to stop learning as a coach. So you just kind of will know what you'll know, you know?
Yeah. I just look at that. I can't pinpoint what other coaches do. I just look at that and say, you know, good people will produce good people. Mm-hmm. And so I think just on a personal level, just, you know,
for coaches, man, you're in this leadership position, and man, that's a honor and a privilege to build people in the middle of that. And I think that, you know, what you just said about personal growth, when you stop growing, that's, you know, obviously a problem. So I just look at it and say, you know, for me personally, I'm doing the same thing I've always, my whole life, and Josh can attest to this, I'm sure. I'm always trying to learn something new. I'm always taking a risk and trying something new. And I think that, you know, if a coach is a good person, then their students are going to be good people. Or they're going to come across as not being jerks to their students, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's just a thought that I have with it, because I don't know exactly what other coaches do, so I don't want to necessarily make a judgment call.
Don't sleep with your students, probably.
That's a big one. Yeah. That's a big one. See, hear that, Bryce? So quit trying to make moves on me. You know,
like, Josh is attractive, but he's taken.
Yeah, I gotta watch that guy. You know, I'm like, Bryce, I'm a bit out of your league. Don't you think? we'll cut that out. Just kind of at this point, we've gone for quite a while, and we've really talked a lot about just coaching, about, you know, just going through coming up for us. Are there any things that you guys look back to, and you want to ask about aha moments in business? Are there any things you look back to as these aha moments as a coach? No, I can go first on this, because there is something that I always think back to, and it's actually what you said earlier in the podcast, was not being tied to, because it was done for me this way, that it has to be done this way, you know. And I just think back to, like, you know, because at first, when you first start teaching jiu-jitsu, it's interesting. Because even though you know jiu-jitsu, you don't generally know how to teach it. Right. It's very hard to explain what it is that you actually do. And then what you'll find yourself doing is teaching exactly what was taught to you. And so then, like, I remember teaching certain things that, like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years before, you taught me these 3 steps to doing them, and you don't even do it that way anymore, and I don't do it that way anymore. And I would teach my students, and then one day, like, someone would ask, like, hey, this isn't what you do. And getting into that mindset of, I'm just going to show what I do now, instead of, this is where I used to be. And, like, the example I always give is like this parent that had maybe a tough childhood and, you know, grew from it, and then, you know, it eventually made something of themselves. And then they look back down to their child and they go, well, you have to go through what I go through, you know. Oh, well, you have to get a job in the place that I had to get a job, because that's the only way. And it's
Josh's way of saying that he thinks I abused him.
this is yep, that's what I'm gonna bring in a counselor now. But that's just kind of like, you see, that is this idea that people will have of, like, yeah, has to be the way. This is how I was taught, and so this is the only way to learn. And when I got rid of that mindset, it kind of changed everything for me as a coach. But that is definitely for me my big aha moment.
Absolutely.
No, that's good. I just think back too on in coaching, and, you know, I don't obviously coach as much as you, but I do run a few classes during the week. And that is just, there are things that I can't teach. You know what I'm saying? They're mm-hmm. like being older, but you're going to see a whole lot of things that you can't do or you can't teach. However, that doesn't mean you can't build good, strong, competitive people in the middle of that. And so for me, it's like, I just remember hearing a thing on, you know, just teaching fundamentals, and what they said was, you don't always have to go wider, you can go deeper. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big moment for me. And that's like, okay, I get that. I can get better at fundamental stuff and still be able to, you know, get people good in jiu-jitsu. So,
Yeah, I think I was thinking about this a little bit too. It's like I've mentioned this many times where I say like, you know, how long I've trained. And then, like, I actually say that all the time. I don't even want to tell people how long I've trained because I think to myself, it's like, okay, like, whatever, 23, 24 years, and then think, like, oh, you're only that good. Just being like, what I mean by that is just that, like, if I, you know, you only know what you know at the time. And, but it's like, if you knew, like, if you had the access to knowledge now, like, or the way the access to knowledge is now with my work ethic back then, I could be way better in a shorter amount of time. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So like it was kind of one of those things where like I was excited to teach as a purple belt, but I only knew what I knew, you know. And you couldn't just go YouTube, you know, whatever, reverse close guard, mantis guard, whatever. You couldn't just figure out these things, and you had to test it or like, you know, get snips of it here and there, and so that's the only thing is what I'd say with coaches now, like to not be shackled to that. Like I feel I look back and I'm like, and it's not, I don't regret anything or think that like, oh yeah. Man, I think everything has happened. It was supposed to happen the way it's supposed to happen. And I'm really, really grateful for it. But that's the only thing you wish kind of like, man, I wish I would have. Cause like some of the guys, you know how you get in that mode where you're like, oh, if you only knew what it was like, you know, your parents say you knew what it was like when I was a kid, kind of like, I just feel it was harder, and now it's easier to be better faster because your access to knowledge, your access to good people. You can go train with anybody.
I know,
you can do privates with anybody. You know what I mean? So anyway, back to the coaching idea is just not being shackled to that, thinking like, oh, you know, I only knew what I knew at the time. You know, like I was only a purple belt, so I could only show you this. It's like, okay, well, let go of that. Now you can be better. You can get better at lots of things, and then encourage your students to be better at lots of things.
You know? I like it.
Absolutely. I think now is as good of a time as ever. As you said, the last time that we were all mic'd up together, we had Junior with us, but we were doing a dad joke off as a fundraiser for Mission 111. So let me ask you guys this. You guys have any dad jokes that you remember from the dad joke off? I remember all of mine went off of one kind of general theme, that you guys were really old. You know, I remember that those were my dad jokes.
Yeah, I remember a couple.
I don't remember any of them. I don't. I really don't.
Yeah, it was.
The only thing I was mad about was that you couldn't laugh at your own jokes. And oh, I kept having to chew the nasty gum because I thought...
We were having to do the bad jelly beans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so what I thought was, I thought every one of my jokes was hilarious. Yeah. So when I would tell them, I would start laughing.
Yeah.
And then I would hear your mom in the background saying, you got to eat another jelly bean. Yeah.
This isn't funny, you know?
I can't
people are pulling their donations.
Like there were some good ones.
There were some great ones.
It was like, how do you find Will Smith in the snow? Look for fresh prints.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one.
We won, didn't we?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think there was actually any type of...
I feel like we won.
I feel like it was...
one. Let's vote on who won.
It was like you know, teaching kids class where you have to fill time. You know, they had this long telethon and they were like, hey, Josh, Steve, Junior, you guys go on stage and fill time. That was what it felt like.
I felt like I was kind of handcuffed, to be honest with you, though, because I felt like all my best material was like too inappropriate for a church.
Yeah, you couldn't be saying it in a church. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Junior's was.
Yeah, Junior had some edgy ones.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was messing with me. I'm like, Junior, you cannot say that here. That was before he thought that was funny.
And he'll always hide behind the accent too.
Yeah.
You know, he'll always be like, oh, I don't know English.
Yeah.
Like, Junior, you've been here for 18 years, bro. What do you mean you don't know that you can't say that? So anything that you guys want to say to finish? Any final thoughts, anything like that?
I don't know. Do you feel like we adequately covered, you know, the student instructor relationship? Do you have any other parts you need to touch on that? Or?
I really think that I think we did. Yeah. I really think that just kind of giving the example of, you know, what it's been like. And
oh man, and I guess, you know, I would just close by saying it's been just a fun time and an honor. you know? So, yeah, and just a great friend, coach. And so we've been able to remain a friendship, remain friends for a long time. So it's a little mushy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Why don't you kiss?
No, I agree. I think it's been like a real special relationship and just knowing each other outside of the gym. And it just hasn't, like, the relationship hasn't just been on the mats, you know, just, you know, it's been super awesome. But I do think that we all get along really well in a lot of ways. But I also think too, just that since we all kind of share that passion of like that growth mindset, we're always trying to get better. I think it all, you know, worked out for the best.
Man, thank you guys for both being on.
Thank you for having us.
And that is the episode. Thank you guys for listening to this one. I really know a lot of people love the dynamic of me, my dad, and then our coach, and the age dynamic, and just that coach-student relationship that we still have. And I think just getting to look at that relationship and talk about it a little bit, and also just kind of talk about coaching in general, and just some things that maybe a student wouldn't think about. And I think we accomplished that. That was really what we set out to do, and I think we accomplished that in this episode. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. I really enjoyed putting this episode together, and that's pretty much all that I have for you guys today. I did wanted to tell you at the end of the episode, just have your little teaser. There's something that we've been talking about on the iSecond Jiu-Jitsu Show for probably like 3 years now, maybe even a little more. And it is this instructional that I've said I was going to put out, and it is called the Trinity of Guard Passing. And I am so happy to tell you guys that we are finally done recording. And honestly, we're done editing. It's pretty much going to be out within a couple weeks now. And we will finally be able to put a pin in guard passing for me for a little while. And just kind of let all of these ideas that I've been teaching and that I've been sharing with all kinds of people across the country, just that those ideas are very good, and they're very helpful for people when it comes to understanding just how to be on top in jiu-jitsu, and how to stay on top, how to not get submitted or swept while you're on top, and then of course how to pass the guard and pin your opponent. And so that is coming out very, very soon, hopefully within the next few weeks, hopefully during the tag team takeover. We'll be able to have some commercials for it, and I will be able to tell you guys about the Trinity of Guard Passing and all you'll get to learn from it. But that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you guys for checking out today's episode. Big thanks to my dad and Kyle for just being on the show, and always being the guys that they are, and just really being good role models for people like me and hopefully people like you. So that is all I have. Hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and I hope that today's episode helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day, guys.